Hey, Chris, welcome to At the Hop.
Well, it's nice to be here.
Thank you.
It's always nice to be at the Hop.
Excellent, Chris. I'm glad to have you at last.
Well, you know, it takes time for anything to happen, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Fate is one of them.
How did you begin in this business, Chris?
Well, I had this, I was surprised how it developed, but sometimes it intrigues me, but at one time when I was growing up playing with my brothers, we played nothing but Mexican music, and then I got into rock and roll, and I decided to make a demo record. To make a long story short as I can make it, when I came home, I was proud of it and played it, but the engineer must have played it for somebody. He said, "Hey, you got to listen to this guy." So a few days later, they called my home, and my mother, she didn't speak hardly any English. And somehow, she's been able to get the number, and I said, "You must be kidding," because she's relating this to me in Spanish. And sure enough, these people who ended up producing me my first record were the ones who discovered me, really. Who changed my name, in fact. My real name is Ezekiel Christopher Montanez. And they said, "What is your nickname, or what do they call you in school?" And I said, "They call me Zeke." They said, "Well, we can't use that name. Are you there?"
Yeah. I'm just listening to you.
I'm sorry. I'm carrying on too long. And so they said, "Well, we're going to change your name to cut from, what is your name?" And I said, "Ezekiel Christopher Montanez." And they said, "So, okay, we'll think about it." And came back a few days later, and they said, we found your name." And I said, "What is that?" And they said, we used Christopher and Montanez and cut it down to Chris Montez. And I think that's one of the first beginning feelings I ever had about getting your name changed. It's something unique, exciting, or whether it's a joke. I don't know.
That's cool, because we all know you as Chris Montez. I learned something new about you tonight.
Yeah.
Do you usually go by Chris Montez other than in the music world? Or do you go by your old name?
A lot of people call me Zeke.
Yeah.
So that's my real name when I tell people when I'm not on stage, I'm not Chris Montez anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you tell us what your first record was?
It was called All You Had to Do Was Tell Me, which I did a duel with a young lady who had a number one hit, and her name was Kathy Young. And the song was, at that time, 1,000 Stars. This is way before I started my thing. And we ended up getting introduced, and somebody suggested we do this song, which was my producer at the time, singing this as a duet, and that's how that happened.
I play that song on my radio show, Chris. I think it's a fabulous song.
Oh, thank you. That's
You're welcome.
The first song I ever wrote. And the people who, when I told you how that incident about my recording,
yeah,
they're the ones who connected, who I ended up writing with. And one was Barry DeLorzon, who taught me, when I came with All You Had to Do Was Tell Me, it's like, he sat at the piano and said, "Well, it needs another verse." And I'm saying, "What? Another verse? What does that mean?" Like, you know.
Yeah.
And then he gave me a framework about composition in reality, in short, you know, just this is how you write a song, you know.
Yeah.
The form.
Yeah.
So that's what formulated my mind.
I'll tell you, Chris, I think you'd be, if you ever listen to my show, I think you'd be really surprised the songs I dig up on you. Do you remember doing a song called You're the One, the B-side of Let's Dance?
Oh, yeah.
I play that one.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
I play that one. I like that song.
Wow. Because, you know, you're talking to someone who sang it when he was a young kid, you know, and it takes you back, you know.
Yeah.
And then when you tell me that, I remember the feeling I had when I thought that was cool I was singing that.
Yeah.
You know, here I am, I'm a hip dude who, you know, this is my thing, you know.
Yeah, I got another one for you. Do you remember doing a song called All You Had to Do Was Tell Me? I play that one too.
Yeah, that's the one I did with Kathy Young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about Tell Me It's Not Over? Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sure do.
Yeah, that's cool. So Let's Dance, that was your first chart record, am I correct?
Yeah, well, all you had to do was a good regional hit to start it, My Name Rolling. And then Let's Dance came after that. And, yeah.
Did you write that song, Chris?
No, I didn't. My producer did.
Oh, okay.
And it's funny, I've had these incidents where I don't feel comfortable with a song. And, because I was a la singing ballads that I did on my album, which was an influence from Ritchie Valens, really.
Yeah.
I mean, he was my inspiration as an artist, I think, large influence, because when I found out he was Mexican, there weren't any Mexican artists out like that, especially doing rock and roll.
Yeah.
So I said, wow, that's unbelievable, man, you know.
What do you think of a song like La Bamba?
What do I think of it? In which respect? How do you...
Just in general, what do you think about it? Do you like it?
Oh, yes. I think it's a great song because it has that certain energy, you know?
Yeah.
And it seems to catch everybody's attention with bam, 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 you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
That part, they can at least sing that so they get into the song, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you grow up in the same area as Ritchie Valens?
No, he was a few years ahead of me, but I met him before he died I think it was maybe 4 months before he died or something.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, because he was an inspiration. I was at this place, at a hop, you know, a regular hop, and it was crowded all the way to the end. I mean, and I had conceded to the fact that I'm going to feel the same way whether I'm up front or in the back. I was just there in the same building with him. That was my philosophy or my feelings. And so when they said Richie will be out in 15 minutes while the band was changing up, you know, changing into another group, I looked to my right and he's standing next to me.
Really?
And that was like someone that was put there for me at that moment for my life.
Yeah.
It's weird, but that's how I see it because it's happened to me more than once.
Yeah.
And so... And I proceeded to say to him that I was a great fan of his and that I wanted to be a singer like him. And he said, thank you. You know, and he shook my hand and he smiled at me. And it was like, you know, you meet your idol or someone that you're really crazy about. You know, you're just like this person. And you meet him and it's kind of, you get to meet someone you always wanted to meet. That feeling is hard to describe, you know, but it's a thrill, being thrilled and at the same time saying, wow, it's unbelievable. You're here, you know.
That's amazing, yeah. That's what it's like when I talk to all the oldies people. It's kind of the same feeling. I can relate.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So after Let's Dance, how did you promote that? Did you go on like American Bandstand concerts? How did you promote that?
Yeah, I got
that?
Invited to go on American Bandstand to do a TV show, and I decided to, I was impressed because I used to come home and watch American Bandstand when I was in high school, you know.
Yeah.
I'm saying, what? You must be kidding, American Bandstand? Dick Clark, you must be kidding.
Yeah,
you know, so,
yeah.
So that whole thrill of it, you know. And then when I finished the show there, they said, you got to go start at the... They had a set for the Apollo, the Howard, and some other theater, black theaters. And I was on the show. And I sort of got there late, so they said they would catch me, that I have to go with them to the next show. So it worked out good for me. Just they said I didn't make rehearsal early enough. So that was my first exposure to the real life.
Yeah.
You know?
And
to make that... And to get into that part in your life where it's hard to describe because all of a sudden now I'm traveling with a black act. I'm touring with one of the best R&B or black singer there is, a soulful, you know, and that was Sam Cooke.
Really, Sam Cooke?
Yeah.
That's
and
awesome.
I did his major tours and. I used to watch him perform, you know, If You Ever Change Your Mind, Bring It Home.
Bring It On Home, yeah.
Bring It On Home, yeah.
Yeah.
And I used to, that was favorite song, and then here I get to watch this person sing to the people and to the ladies, and you know, I learn a lot by watching that, you know.
Exactly.
How I charm people, and just spoke to them.
And I play a song by Sam Cooke. My probably favorite one is "Twisting the Night Away." Oh. Another Saturday Night. Ever hear that one?
That's a great song.
That's a great one.
That's a great song that needs to be revived.
Yeah, I play that on my show. I really enjoy that
well,
one.
You know, you're playing some good stuff because, you know, that's one of a kind.
Yeah.
And that's one of a kind era. And that was the beginning of rock and roll, you know, translate into another area which came from the country and western, you know, the rockabilly and that stuff.
Exactly, I
mean. Well, and of course, the large influence of the black, you know, where Chuck Berry came out and started doing his thing, and that's the heart of rock and roll right there.
Exactly. Especially,
well, anyway, I'm sorry to get it.
That's okay. I really enjoy talking to you. I enjoy these old stories.
Yeah.
So always... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
What were some of your other songs on Monogram Records?
Well, there was, let's see, No, 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 I think. That's the song I wrote.
Yeah.
I can't even think of all the tunes. Let's see. The other one.
Some Kind of Fun.
Some Kind of Fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Some Kind of Fun was a great hit for me, too.
Really? Yeah, that's a very good one.
It's, you know, it has to... That, whole different other trip to it, but like I'm in the point of I've always been, I guess, a musical fiend from, you know, for transitions of different forms of music or how they're combined and how they create a certain feel, and so I got very involved in playing jazz and studying jazz as seriously as I could because it's a language, and it's more than about notes. It's how the notes are presented in within the structure of the melody. You know, simple melody, or as complex as you want to get.
Really?
Yeah, and the complexity comes with where it starts using a whole variety of different chord passages that are all related. And if you know how to intervene through those changes, it's like you're playing with a symphony because those group of notes are like voices, you know, that are singing the song the way it was written, even though sometimes you don't hear the melody, but in your mind you do.
So is jazz kind of like classical music?
Well, classical is a real foundation because it gives it form, but then when we got into... Well, that era of Dixieland blues and jazz and all that, with, you know, all those different artists that came from that era, that's where it all began.
Exactly.
So we have black artists like in the blues era, Charlie Parker, which now I'll read his music or I'll read how he thought when he was playing these songs, you know, when he was doing solos over them or when he wrote them. You know,
yeah,
and that's how you learn about music and who presented that form of music to give you an education on form. You know,
the black artists, they really knew how to make records, if you ask me.
They just have the natural soul, the spiritual soul, I call it.
Because
I don't think the I think that the when I see them in my mind's eye, I see this culture that went through all this trials and tribulations, even until now, and because of the color of your skin, your ethnic background, you know, it's like sometimes I think I see that God had a plan, you know, and that's why they believe in God as strong as they do because. You know, when faith hits you, it's there, you know. You can't change it. You don't want to change it.
Exactly.
you know. So I think that, and having that kind of faith makes you overcome, I would personally say, makes you overcome all kinds of obstacles in your life. Because you know there's more to life than just flowing. Life is a flash. I tell my nephew, life's a flash, and it's true. It's just boom, you know.
It is. It truly is. You must feel like it, what you were young like a day ago.
Yeah, of course. And you cram all these, you know, 1 minute I do the Dick Clark show, next minute I'm traveling with all these great black and artists, like, you know, doing same shows with, let's see, I'm trying to think of all the artists around the show. Sam Cooke, Jerry Butler, Smokey Robinson, and Miracles. I mean, I got to interact with them every day on these tours, you know, the shows every night. So I watched them. And I was honored to be there on that show with them because I learned a lot of things.
Another thing, speaking of the Miracles, another group, that's another group I kind of play. I play a lot of their early stuff, like on the smaller labels before they got really successful. I think it's fabulous stuff.
Yeah.
It's really
cool. Like I always say, you know, a good song will always stand. You know, and most composers or people who write, composition, you know, if the song is strong, you know, it doesn't matter how you want to change it around after it's a hit. It will always stand on its own, you know.
Exactly. How did you get on A&M Records?
Okay, that's a fun... with that whole ordeal of Let's Dance, remember?
Yeah.
Then I got invited to go, after the Sam Cooke show, they said they want you to go to England. And that's how this other form of life transferred, while I'm living in this era of Let's Dance and Some Kind of Fun. And I had the number four song coming up in the charts in England, and they... And there was another artist. There was mainly Tommy Roll, who sang Sheila. And then our opening act was the Beatles, you know. And no one really knew who the Beatles were. And so I got to see that transition of life, you know, going through something that was just like, what happened, you know?
Exactly. That's like the sound.
I mean, here I am the headliner for most of the tour. In England.
Exactly.
And, you know, we're doing this thing, and, you know, and these people, the girls are yelling and screaming at us, and, you know, because American artists were very strong over there. But then I started turning around, you know. And so I got that whole transition. I got to learn from them. And I remember one time when we toured about the second week in the tour, and they disappeared for a while, and they said, then they came back and said, because we had 3 days off. And I said, where were you guys? And they said, we were finishing our album. I said, really? And yeah. You want to hear it? Yeah. So they put this, Paul puts this disc on the record player and starts playing it. And the first song was, just 17. We see
really?
17, you know what I mean? You know that song?
I do know that song, yep.
Tell me, what's the name of it?
I saw her
standing there, right?
I saw her standing there, yep.
Yeah. Anyway, to make the long story short, I kept making them play that, but I heard that album. One of the first listeners to ever hear that album, you know? I mean, I think about, wow, if you could take things back in time, you know, and act, you know. Maybe say, can I have a, or can you, let me, can I get a copy of that?
I'll give you a copy, yeah. Just give me your address.
No, I'm talking, I could have said that to them.
Oh, okay, all right,
it,
yeah.
We're dancing, having a few beers up there, and I'm listening to this album, and I'm saying, wow. But, you know, there's another thing, an insight I got from watching the Beatles is, you know, that no one, well, at the time, not even myself, knew that much about it. But they had been paying their dues, you know, playing in bars in Germany and all that, and joints, you know what I mean? It's just, and working on what, you know, on their chops, what we call their chops, you know, their voices, you know, their playing, the structure, you know.
Exactly.
And so when I used to watch them do Love Me Too, it was amazing because I say, wow, you know, they're really tight. You know, they just like, here we are, you know.
Exactly.
And now that I want to reflect on that, I think about all the adventures I had with one of the greatest rock and roll bands in the world. Me, you know, I think, wow, that's interesting. You know?
You're very fortunate, Chris. I mean, you really saw the beginning of the Beatles right there.
Yeah, I was the one that turned it over from that tour. That was it, and then it came over here. And it turns into something that just continue influencing different musicians, you know.
Exactly.
At the same time, I think about how fortunate I was that during the 60s invasion, when they were, you know, heavily covered on the charts, right, music play.
Exactly.
I was getting a lot of play, too, with a whole different thing, like The More I See You and Call Me. You know, and that's a whole different other trip than I was doing with like that. Because
it's kind of like you changed like whole different styles of music.
Yeah. And that came about because I my first career with Let's Dance and doing all that stuff, you know, I sort of got cheated and with my contract and all this. That story's over, but I just decided to come home, and I was kind of, to tell you the truth, disappointed and embarrassed at what had transpired in my life.
Really?
And I said, okay, I'm going to just keep it low, and I'm going to go. And I decided I'm going to go to this college and study, music at the junior college, which is El Camino College, the name of El Camino.
Really?
And I studied, you know, piano, sort of, you know, trying to learn the structure of music and analyzation in a short form is just, tell me what chords you're using. And if you know the form, it's generally easy. Once you know the form, it's not a complicated form.
Really?
No. But being I wasn't a great pianist, so I couldn't, you know, execute what I, you know, like classical form. But, of course, I didn't have that training that much there. Oh, well, anyway, we're proceeding that part of my life and story, how I met Herb Alpert. Well, I had a friend who took me to this company, and he wanted me to keep him company, so make a long story short, we're in the car, and boom, there we are. And Herb Alpert comes out and says to him, thank you, Bob, we can't use any of the tracks, the music, thanks for bringing the music by. And this friend of mine by the name of Bob, he said, this is Chris Montez, this came out of Bob. And I think, oh, and I didn't know Herb Alpert at the time. It's just a person. And I said, he said, are you Chris Montez, the singer? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, I'd like to, if it's okay with you, I'd like to have you on our label and everything. He said, would you be interested? And I said, no, I don't want to record anymore. He said, well, think about it. And I said, yeah, no. And I was really set about it. And then about a couple months later, I decided to go back and give it a try. And while I was recording, of course, my thinking process, getting off the Let's Dance situation, that I would go to start writing the same form of music, which was in my blood, you know. And so I started writing things. And we're in the studio recording this stuff. In fact, I was playing a lot of harmonica then.
Really?
I wrote this thing called "Go." It was good. Go ahead on, and that song ended up being on the backside of "Call Me."
Really?
I don't know if you can find it, but if you can find that one, that'll surprise you.
Really?
It'll be the because that'll tell you my story. When Herb Alpert had heard what we'd written and produced, and he said to the co-producer, he says, the co-producer told me, Herb doesn't like what we're doing. I said, oh, man, what's that about? And he said, he wants to talk to you. He's got an idea. So I walk in his office, and I'm thinking, well, you know, what's new in life? Just stand up and do it, see what's going on. And he said, I got an idea. I got this song goes like, if you're feeling sad and lonely, start singing this song to me. And I think, whoa. I mean, how can I? I mean, hey, you know, you got the heavyweights to sing that form of music, you know.
Like, exactly. I was,
they categorize a Sinatra or that kind of song, you know. And I said, he said, come on, you'll be great, you know. And I said, so in the studio, when I'm singing, call me, he's standing right next to me, sort of, and singing with me, sort of giving me the feel. And that's how that form developed. And then from then, I went into the standard field, you know. There was an album called Watch What Happens, which I favor that one a lot. Time After Time was a beautiful album. And Call Me The More I See is another great album.
They're all good, really.
Thank you. So I'm just, you know, elaborating on where my life's been, and since you
it's
wanted
very
to
interesting,
do an interview,
Chris. It's very interesting.
I don't. Well, I'm glad I'm able to share these with you, because if people hear it, they'll know where it all developed and how it developed.
Exactly.
And so let's see, and where I'm today. Well, during that A&M stuff, I started decided to go and structure myself to learn the real deal about form. So I studied it. At the time, I was studying a classical foundation, you know, forms, you know, sonatas, and so this, I had a great teacher that I just, by God's faith, again, put me in there. And he had like three other students. And from there, he said, you know what? You got to come to the class. It's cheaper and it's better.